Hi, you're listening to Healing of the Earth Radio in Guelph, Ontario, and I'm speaking with a man named Wilf Price, a native elder from the Haida Gwaii Islands of northwest British Columbia, and a member of the Truth Commission into Genocide in Canada. Wilf will be talking about the history and the use of residential schools in genocide in Canada and the continuing genocide today perpetrated by the institutions of the Canadian state and the church and the military. Wilf, can you please introduce yourself and tell us about your involvement with the Truth Commission?
I got involved, first of all, my name is Wilf Price. That's my Christian name. My Haida name is Dayung Kadunts, and that means the flag from the people of the inlet. And I was born 57 years ago on the reserve in Haida Gwaii on the north end of Graham Island. And I lived my first 17 years there, and then I became enfranchised in 1951. I became an upstanding and outstanding white man for 38 years on paper, and then which was called the Enfranchisement Act, and then I got my status back in 1985, and I've been a good Indian ever since. So that's basically where I've been. I've been in Aboriginal politics a lot of my life. I've been in radio now for 3 years with Hidden from History, and it was actually a phone-in that got me involved with Hidden from History and the Truth Commission.
And what kind of stuff do you yourself do with the Truth Commission?
I'm basically the front man for the Truth Commission right now, because a lot of people have been reluctant to speak. But now that an Aboriginal person who isn't involved with any affiliated organizations such as the Treaty Commission, the First Nations Summit, or the Assembly of First Nations, I'm not involved with any of those organizations because they're basically a mimic for the, or a mime for the federal and provincial governments, and most of the people there I consider collaborators with the federal government. So when I got the opportunity, I decided to devote my time to this rather than go with the plastic.
And what do you see as the main purpose for you for the Truth Commission into Genocide in Canada?
Well, I see myself in an educational role. I see myself regarding the education of the non-native population to the not only to the residential schools and the horror and the Holocaust that happened throughout that, but the Indian Act and the disability that it's causing right now within Aboriginal nations. And I'm doing a private study on Aboriginal people, and I'm finding a lot of people that are of Aboriginal heritage, regardless of whether they were born on the reserve or off the reserve, simply because we're in a special section of the Constitution of Canada. We were and are made special, and that's caused special circumstances for us, such as anxiety, depression, and all of those related diseases. So that's basically what the message I'm trying to get out, and it's a tough message to give out because people just are not ready to listen to the truth.
Yeah, I think it's very true. A lot of people have a very difficult time listening to the facts of, you know, what's really gone on the last few centuries in Canada. A lot of people seem to have an inability or a blockage even to want to make that a part of the regular worldview, I think, as well.
Yeah. Well, I can speak for the Haida Nation. We were as much as 50,000 strong at one time. People have a hard time believing it. People have a hard time believing that we had buildings as large as 100 feet long and 60 feet wide and four stories down into the ground. But those are the types of myths that were gathered by anthropologists and missionaries and so-called explorers. So those are the types of things that I'm trying to get out into the public eye.
Mm-hmm. And you do that through your radio show?
Oh, yeah. I do a lot of it through the radio show.
Yeah.
I do a lot of... actually, this week was really, really promising. I mean, each week it gets more and more promising as we speak more and more of the truth without repercussion.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt that anyone will put the hammer down on us right now because of, you know, the kinds of promises that were made to the Aboriginal nations by the Liberal government and backed by the Conservative, although I don't think the Conservative government will do as much as the Liberals will.
Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering that, considering that the listeners, people listening today might not have the same knowledge base as you or I do or anything like that, maybe we could talk a bit about do you mind talking a bit about the role of residential schools in Canada's genocidal policies throughout the 20th century?
Okay, the residential schools were basically created to just a sec.
No problem.
The residential schools were basically created to assimilate Aboriginal people. First of all, the Indian Act from 1876 late 1880s were not doing a good enough job in assimilation. So the whole process of the Indian Act was to assimilate people, and the residential schools were not effective until they hit the West Coast, and then the assimilation process really started in a big way, because in 1921 to 1931 we see the degeneration of the basic family unit, the mother, the matrilineal heritage of our people being knocked down, people losing sight of their language and their culture, or having it beaten out of them. My father was in residential school for 5 years before his father, my grandfather, knew where he was, he and his brother were. Because as late as the 1960s, children were simply being scooped off of the reservations. And then by threat and intimidation on both sides, from the residential school principals to the priests to the Indian agents on reserve and the RCMP officers off reserve, they all maintained a threat process by saying, please, you know, don't try to escape. Otherwise, your parents are going to be hurt in some way. And in the same token, my father was threatened by saying, they said, well, if you try to escape on one of the fish boats that come by during the year, your grandfather will, or your father will, lose his boat and his possessions because of the Indian Act. So there was a lot of the residential school children. My dad was 10, but there was a lot of physical and emotional abuse with my father. But I believe my uncle was sexually abused. I believe that there were murders committed on at St. Michael's residential school, because there were boys who were bigger than most who were packing out bodies of young girls who, as young as 13 or 14, who had been impregnated by either a minister or the principal of the school. And primarily in those days, the ministers were usually the principals anyway. So they had their, basically they had their pick. It was a pedophile heaven for a lot of people for a lot of years. And this continued on until the 60s. My father was, he wouldn't...
Wow, you still there?
Whoa.
Hello.
Hi, you all right?
Yeah, I don't know what that was.
Okay, anyway, the principal of the school was a kinder man, but the people that he delegated authority to was not. And my father wouldn't stop speaking his language, which was his first language in 1931 was Haida. I mean, they hadn't even heard of residential schools. And so the residential school supervisors were allowed to take him out to the barn, and he was undressed, tied to a chair, his legs spread-eagled, and they used an electric cattle prod on him. And they did that until he passed out three times. And that was a cattle prod to the penis. And those were the type... that was only one of the many kinds of punishment that they were put on. I can go into detail about my uncle was out on wood chopping detail, along with they even had girls chopping wood, and they had managed to sneak away. And while they were in a place of concealment, they saw the minister and the Salvation Army, or the church army at that time, representatives helping pack out bodies and burying them underneath the new section of the school that was going up. So that was the southeast or southwest section of the school. I mean, everyone knows where it is, but no, the band councils refused to allow people to dig.
Hmm.
There are a lot of people who have testified to little girls being kicked down steps, having their necks broken, and dying in front of them. And yet, when they got home, it was reported, or when the news was delivered to their parents, they said they died of natural causes. So a lot of, and a lot of them were reported as just being runaways, and uncontrollable children. So those are the types of, those were the documentation is just horrendous. And the University of BC, I think, is probably one of the best sources of information if anyone wants to get it. But the University of Waterloo, too, has a good collection on residential school. But the unfortunate thing is, although all the libraries in the country have the Indian Act of 1931, before the other nations of people started bugging the Canadian government about their cruelty to the First Nations people. They hadn't made a change to the Indian Act. In fact, in the Indian Act of today, there are still references to persons and Indians. So we're still considered less than human.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit more about the Indian Act and what its role is today?
Boy,
I know that's a big question.
Well, no, it's not a the larger question is the conditioning of people on reserve. For example, I come from a matrilineal background. The hereditary chief was my great grandfather, and my mother is the matriarch of our clan. So all the people who number probably about 3,000 are all supposedly under her watch. But with the Indian Act, there are band councils in Skidigit and Masset. Therefore, in Skidigit and Masset, there are 12 or 8 elected members of council, one being the chief counselor, and they supposedly run the affairs of the village. What they actually do is that they are responsible not to the people, but they are accountable only to the Treasury Board and the Department of Indian Affairs. And therein lies the problem. Everything is centralized in the offices of the administrator. The other thing is that 70% of Aboriginal people right across Canada are living in urban centers and probably in the poorest sections of town, such as the East End in Vancouver that you constantly hear about. And a lot of them are residential school survivors or victims who simply moved from the residential schools down into the urban settings, not wanting to go home again, believing that their parents had deserted them. So those are the types of things that the Indian Act and the residential school system did for people. So 30% of the people on a per capita basis, say you have, we'll say 10,000 Haidas right now. Well, there are only 3,000 in two villages, 1,500 in each village, who are supposedly gaining or getting the per capita dollars, but really 57 cents out of every dollar from the Department of Indian Affairs or from the Treasury Board to the Department of Indian Affairs goes to the administration of Indian Affairs. So we only get a trickle of 43%.
Wow.
You know, so, I mean, those are known facts. And, anyone with a brain would look at that and say that it's criminal. But in Canada, the human rights kingdom of the Western world, it just can't be true. But what has happened is that the reason that the $5 billion has been promised by the Liberal government is because of the outside pressure. The young are getting so well educated that they're pushing the old-time leaders like Phil Fontaine and people like Ed John out here and other people who have been bought by the system out of their comfort zone. They're not going by they're not laying by the wayside and saying, okay, we'll elect this person and allow this person to do whatever they want. I mean, the first thing that Phil Fontaine did when he became the chief of the Assembly of First Nations was double his salary. You know, I mean, this type of graft is going on constantly. Mm-hmm. And it not only happens in Manitoba and Ontario and Quebec, but quite a bit more so in BC.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit about your response to the government's pledge of $4 or $5 billion to residential school survivors?
That's a joke.
Yeah.
They said, okay, for the residential school survivors, my father was one of them, but he died in 99. But even if he had received this, or even if my mother was able to get this right now, she would only be entitled to $38,000. The most I've ever heard of is that amount, was $38,000. So that's for 10 years of abuse, emotionally, physically, and sexually, that these children had to suffer through. I just met a young fellow by the name of, I won't mention his name, but he was married, his mother was married to one of my best friends, and they had, I didn't realize at the time, but they had 8 children. And after they got out of residential school, where they stayed for a full 10 years, 6 of them committed suicide in foster homes. So those are the types of numbers that are hidden when you talk about the $5 billion. So $5 billion may sound like a lot to people across Canada, but it isn't. It doesn't mean a thing when you consider the fact that people died while they were incarcerated in residential schools.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, like, what else was the point of that $4 billion? Was it just like, was it split up among as far as like money to go towards people who survived the schools, or was there anything else that the government admitted to in that whole package?
No, what the only thing that I see that might, now I it's a big might, because it was said so quickly during the news conference that there's supposed to be a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Now, why put $5 billion toward people? They're already paid off, and then have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, very similar to South Africa. In fact, South Africa's apartheid law was part and parcel the Indian Act that you have in Canada. So the apartheid that happened is not going to is never going to be paid. I mean, there are simply people that are so old that are going to come forward, and their wounds are going to be ripped open again. Their guts are going to be falling on the floor, and there are going to be no psychologists or psychiatrists to do anything with them, and there aren't any now. So, I mean, it's a complete waste of time,
mm-hmm.
and it's a buyout for the government, hoping that no one, after being supposedly given $5 billion, they're hoping that everybody will keep quiet.
Yeah. In your opinion, what do you think, what would be the response, an appropriate response you'd like to see from the government? Like, what kind of stuff do you really want to see happen? Do you think has to happen?
Well, I think what really has to happen, first of all, is that negotiations with the federal and provincial governments have to be substantial. Have to be moved to the forefront before anything can be done. Secondly, they have to have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission prior to any monies being paid out, And there has to be an educational process within the educational system of the Indian Act and the residential schools, no matter how horrible they may be. You know, even the Holocaust of Europe has been taught in schools, and yet our own Holocaust here has not been taught. And I think those two are the main steps that have to be taken by the federal government.
And what do you think people of privilege in Canada, like white people and any non-native person, can do to act in solidarity? Like, what would you like to see in your own mind?
I think they have to be a little bit more open to an educational process. They have to be a little bit more open to the truth. They have to take responsibility. In spite, a lot of the comments that I get was, "Why don't you guys forget about this? This was in the past. You know, we're here now. This is now. Forget about the past. We didn't do these things to you." Well, of course, but then the Indian Act is still in place. Why isn't there anything being done to cut that out? And that's simply because we're a threat to the economy, and once we get negotiations properly rolling, then all of a sudden nobody likes their pocket being picked, and that's exactly what people think. So in order to get a proper perspective, people have to be involved in the negotiation process themselves and not just bureaucrats and lawyers. The only people that have gotten rich off of negotiations are lawyers.
And maybe can we talk a bit about United Church? Like, a lot of the Truth Commission emails that I get focus on the United Church and getting them to uncover or at least admit to what's been going on with them in the past decades. Well, why is there so much focus on the United Church compared to other churches?
Well, the United Church is, I mean, there are no clean hands in this thing. The Anglican Church was at St. Michael's at Alert Bay. The United Church had most of the schools, and that's why a lot of the focus is on them. But then the Catholic Church had a lot of orphanages and a lot of residential schools too. But the reason that the United Church is being fingered right now, and a lot of people don't know it, is because in 1925. It was an act of the legislature. And it was an act of the federal government, that, the House of Commons, that the United Church came into being. So it wasn't even a church that began its roots in, say, the Church of England or in Rome. I mean, it was right in Ottawa. And that was just to speed up the residential school process. So that's why a lot of people are zeroing in on the United Church, and they happen to be the meanest and the cruelest.
I didn't know about that, that the church is a creation so recent.
Yeah.
When was the last residential school open till?
I believe the last one was closed in 1980, and that was in northern Alberta. I was actually I actually knew one of the teachers that started the push to close that school down because of the conditions of so it was in 1980. And it was in 1985 that the Enfranchisement Act was taken off the books. So there are a lot of things that were secretly removed from the Indian Act that that people don't even know about. But first of all, people don't even know that the Indian Act has a subtitle saying that it's an act respecting Indians. And that's a joke too.
Yeah. Can you I mean, in reading Hidden from History, Kevin's book, I've read some of it, and he talks about things like children being given to pharmaceutical companies for lab experiments and stuff like that, and different kinds of medical experiments being done on kids in residential schools. Can you talk a bit about that? Because I don't know very much, and I think that's one of those things that truly is hidden from history in Canada.
Well, one of the things that happened were a lot of the children were being put into the beds where other children had TB, and that's how they passed the TB on in the residential schools. Then they took these children and built special hospitals in certain parts of the provinces across the country, and they were literally experimental stations for people. Even the Germans who were in flight from the United States were allowed to come into Canada and practice their experimentation in Canada on Aboriginal people.
Do you mean after World War II?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like people who were formerly doctors in Nazi Germany came to Canada.
Right. Yeah, there is proof of it in Bella Bella, Alert Bay, Nanaimo, and there was one at Miller Bay in Prince Rupert that people don't even know about. But people were kept in those places for 12 years. They didn't know what was being done to them, only that they became sicker and they died when they got home. After all the experimentation on them, they were sent home to die.
Wow. Yeah, there's so much more I want to ask you, but we only have about 5 more minutes, Wolf.
Yeah, well, I've actually run out of time here.
Okay.
But if you'd like, you can leave a message for me at 604 215-7571.
Okay. And can you maybe give us a quick little bit of a link to more information about all this kind of stuff?
Okay, the linkage to the hidden, it's called hiddenfromhistory.org. And you can get all of the, actually, you can listen to all of the radio shows on the computer. And you can also call up the testimonials and all of the informations with regard to residential schools.
All right. Thanks for sharing such personal things.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Have a great day.
Okay.
Bye.